Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara. This has been a little bit difficult for us to get going today because you were going to see like a whole throwback to season one moment where I was in the RV, but instead I'm just in this little tiny black hole room in my in-laws' house. I'm traveling, so coming to you from the hills of Tennessee.
Your sound is so much better and my brain doesn't feel like there's static, and it was itchy and I don't know how else to describe it.
I know, I'm just itchy because I'm hot.
Every time that we log on to record, we can see each other and we can hear each other, but I'm logged in as a producer, so I will adjust audio and make sure the tones are correct and all of that kind of stuff. And Kara logs in from the RV with the fan blowing because it's 90 degrees and she's swimming in humidity, but her skin looks great.
I'm so like, moist here.
I can't. I don't think I ever record it anywhere except right here in my office, and my stuff stays set up.
Yeah. And I have to set up every single time we record, basically. So you never know what you're going to get.
It's a little peek behind the scenes. But we are a small family business, everyone. Enjoy.
Behind the curtain, if you will. But one of the things that we were talking about before is I was more comfortable in the RV because, one, I could control the temperature, but two, because I felt like here, which is in my in-laws' house, I was going to be masking. So we're just going to come right at the top of the hour and talk about masking because I am in a room in the middle of the house, one-story house, and everybody basically has to walk by all the time. So I'm like, I know myself well enough to know that if I am in this central space where people can hear me, I will be masking. Which is like anytime I'm recording a video, that's why I'm often recording in my garage gym because I'm the only one there. And I'm like, I'm not going to be masking. I'm just going to be my truest self. And so I know that about myself. So the topic of masking is an interesting one to talk about. Would you like to explain what it is, Kim?
Well, somewhat, but we have touched upon this a few times. And really the point that drove home to me when you and I were doing the photo shoot with Caroline last year after podcast movement, and I said something to the effect of, oh, you know, don't worry, she's just tired.
Kara's dying because she hasn't eaten.
Yes, yes, which also somewhat, but you said, no, I'm fine. I'm just not masking. And I was like, oh.
Right. Oh.
And I feel like I do that constantly. Mm-hmm. And the times that I'm not, I don't even realize, but like, that's when I'm recharging and that's when I feel myself. I don't have to mask in front of Mike, in front of the kids, in front of my parents, in front of my good friends, even though that is a different kind of draining being with friends, because it's, even if you're not masking, it's still like, we're all together and we're all awake. Like, I can't just lay down and take a nap in the middle of that time. But I had my family from Illinois in town this past weekend, and they just went back yesterday before we leave on our road trip. So by the time this comes out, we will already be in Illinois enjoying family vacation time. And my cousin, who is my age that I'm the closest with, she and her two boys just decided on the 4th of July to come out with my other cousin and my aunt. And it was so exciting because I love, love spending time with my family and having them here. Like, that's how I grew up, was around all of them. And Jenna was here with her boys, and like, she and I can sit there and just, ugh. But also she can't because her kids are much younger. And the whole weekend, like, we were on the go constantly and took them to pools and all kinds of things. And all I could think of is I'm just sitting there like, I don't miss my kids being this age. Like, yeah, they're cute and cuddly, but also I don't have to wipe their butts and I don't have to buckle them into car seats and all of these things that I'm watching her just run around. It's like, good for you. We were momming next to each other and helping each other out. And then our moms were around during the day and it's fine, but they left and I just sat in my car and like stared off into the distance. I was like, holy cow. That's tiring. Oh, and by the way, you have that coming up with your kids. Enjoy.
Yeah. No, I totally identify with this because I just finished a brand trip and I was in Nashville for a brand trip and I had the most fun. It was amazing. And I felt like I didn't have to mask. I think in general,
yeah,
I feel like I don't have to mask as much. And that's a big part of why I try to be as authentic as possible on social media so that it removes a little bit of that stigma from me so I don't have to mask as hard. Mm-hmm. But there were multiple times during the weekend where I thought, I'm acting weird. Maybe I should be more social. Like, people are going to think I'm a bitch because I am not speaking to everyone and I don't have a smile on my face. There were multiple times that those thoughts entered my head, but I didn't feel like I needed to mask as much as I normally do just because it was a lot of very authentic, amazing women, lots of different walks of life and mentalities and things like that. But I did at one point, there was a little bit of time Saturday afternoon where everyone was recording content and it was kind of like a do what you need to do during these 4 or 5 hours. And I was like, I'm going back to the RV to put my brain in rice because I might die otherwise. Like, I need to take it offline and put it back online later. But I knew that that's what I needed. And I knew that I had my baby with me for all of the events too. And she really needed it, which was kind of interesting to see. She was kind of like a litmus test for me because when she started getting overwhelmed and like overstimulated, mm-hmm. which she was with me and we were doing things pretty nonstop from like Thursday midday until Saturday afternoon, we were kind of going nonstop and she was with me. She's 5 months old now. And by Saturday midday, she didn't want any more of my crap, basically. And so she and I both needed to go home and just kind of like rest and reset. And so it was interesting to see that. And I think this topic of masking, it's something that a lot of us, especially women, lot of women are beginning to realize we do because we do it so that we're more palatable. Right. And so no one calls us bitches.
I mean, anymore, I get called a bitch. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. So I guess you're in the face. I don't know. Like, I think people are just see me and be like, oh, she's rude.
And I think if you are learning about this and you are not a survivor or maybe you're a support person or something, your masking, in my experience, changes. So I have always been a big, like, I'm social and happy and extrovert and smiley. And part of that is just, that's my personality. That's how I am anyway. And I don't feel drained by that. It's actually refreshing, but I do have to have that equal amount of downtime. But then when you go through something traumatic, it's going to throw all of that off. And I felt like it took so much more for me to be that, you know, what I would quote unquote say is my normal self after that trauma happened, because doing that was depleting and ruining all of my energy. And I think my roommates at the time took a lot of the brunt of that. Not that it was necessarily a bad thing, but like one of my new roommates and I love our naps and we would nap in the middle of the day all the time. And it was great. And that was refreshing for me. But then like little things that would set me off that normally wouldn't have before were all present. And again, we're 20 turning 21, three of us living in our apartment together. And I was having to reevaluate what masking and actually just being my slack jawed, stare off into the distance, recharge self was. I think there's probably a lot of people that would resonate with, that your masking looks different or takes less effort when you're not in a state of trauma. And mm-hmm. we are expected constantly to look and feel and present as though everything's okay. And people who haven't been through it don't understand just how much effort that is taking.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to also acknowledge that it goes both ways, because I feel like masking can be anything where you feel like you have to act the way people expect you to act. Mm-hmm. So for me, after my trauma, you guys have heard me say 500 times, everyone was like, you have to be affected. You have to be upset. You have to be blank. And that could be very compelling to mask in the other direction of how impacted I was, but I didn't feel that. And so there was like a disconnect in, well, this is what society says I should be. This is what they say I should present as, and it's not how I feel. So I think let's just lend some authenticity and some acceptance to the idea that masking can be anyway. Yep. If society tells you, you have to be traumatized, but you don't feel traumatized, girl, get it.
Yeah. Well, and this goes back to the even finer point of juries. Your juries expect a certain level of victimization or action in court and your demeanor, and they are watching and judging you for that. Mm. That is obviously indicative of the rest of our population. But in those boiled down moments, like, that's something that we have to consider. And people would not think about that unless they've had to sit in that witness chair. Mm-hmm. Those who've been through trauma know what it's like to feel as though you're in that seat. Doesn't matter if you had to take the stand in court or not, but you feel like you are constantly in the hot seat, and it can be draining regardless of what way you're masking. If it's not affecting you, that's okay. But people are going to expect something different. And I see that in your comment sections all the time. People are uncomfortable with how you are portrayed in the movie, even though that's like, that's by your own direction to Katie. Bro. And dude, this is how I was. And people are like, why is she being so mean? And why isn't she doing XYZ? It doesn't matter what the example is, but people are uncomfortable seeing a survivor presented as anything but broken and distraught.
Well, and they also insert things that didn't actually happen. So in the recent retelling that I did, people are like, oh, when I heard your voice crack at this point, I could tell it was so hard for you. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure. I just had a little too much dairy, probably. I don't know. I'm like, I don't think my voice did crack. Or they'll be like, oh, I see you're self-soothing. And I'm like, bro, I got the tism. I don't know. Like, I just touched myself. I just, like, I'm going to stop. I'm going to cut that one off right there. Bilateral stimulation. Oh my God. So there's this video I'm going to have to share. I'll share it on the podcast. But speaking of Nashville and unmasking and not feeling the need to mask, one of the girls that was there was riding with me to the gym, and she was in the back seat, and Nashville be trying to kill people with the traffic. It was awful. At one point, I am not kidding you when I say this, I was driving down the road. It was like an industrial road, and a guy fell off the back of a truck in front of my car and rolled into the road. And I was like, what is happening, Nashville? I was like, what? There's like accidents right beside me. There's a whole air conditioning unit that's just like in the middle of the highway. And I was like, what is happening, Nashville? It was insane. Anyway,
we are more rural. I have decided, like, both of us, where we don't have that huge big city traffic, because Mike and I, when we went to New York a few years ago, we were in a cab and the guy straight up hit a pedestrian walking across the median. Not only did the cab driver not stop, the guy that got hit didn't even flinch. He's just like, go about my day.
Carry on. That's all the things to be said about masking.
Well, I was going to say, do you feel, so since you had to move from the RV into your in-law's house, the conversation that we were having before this was, you don't want to go in there because then you feel like you're going to be masking. You know this about yourself. Do you feel like you're doing it right now?
A little bit. Yeah. Because I have headphones on, it helps. When I walked in, I didn't see anyone. That helped. But I also can't really hear anyone. But I know that I am filtering everything that I'm saying through the lens of someone else being able to hear it.
Yep. And that most likely is what a lot of people do at all times, especially if they don't feel safe in their environment.
Right.
Everything is going to be taken into account. And I can't stress the level of effort enough that takes, and it depletes us and takes away from all of the other things that we could be doing or processing or thinking about or solving. And that's a constant for us.
Yeah. And that is one of the reasons, I already said this, I'm going to circle back around to it, but that's one of the reasons why we do try to show up here as authentically and vulnerably as possible. But I do that on social media, and it gets me a lot of hate. So I put a clip up. Yeah, let's go here.
I'm so excited.
Oh my God. So I know I put a clip up of the podcast of me talking about how you don't have to forgive anyone. And of course that riled up the evangelicals. And I wanted to make sure that I was not off base with the things that I was saying. So you'll see a post that by the time this airs, it will probably be up. We're going to go on a quick little side quest really quick.
I love side quests. Life is side quests.
I love a side quest. So a few years ago, one of my dear friends, who was my pastor at the time, asked me, how is what you're doing promoting or building the kingdom, right? Like, how is it bringing people to God? And I was like, I don't know. So I thought about it and I prayed about it for a little while. And if this is not your jam, just stick with me for a second because it is pertinent to what we're talking about. I marinated on it. And what I realized is that a lot of people that are going to be finding me, finding you, finding this podcast are hurting, period. They've been hurt. They are hurting. And in order to truly understand religion, most religions, you have to understand what love is, what true acceptance is. And a lot of people who are hurting don't know what that is, or they've been hurt by religion. And so what I came to realize is my job here on this earth is triage. So when people come and they're hurting, my job is to show up, accept people as they are, love them right where they are, and show them that who they are right now is okay, but it's also okay to want to be better. That doesn't mean that you don't love who you are right now. It just means that you know you are good enough and worthy enough to keep going and keep growing. And so that's what I've come to realize. So knowing that that is the backbone of who I am and how I want to show up here, I'm going to put up some stuff that's really going to kind of push some people's buttons from time to time, because I want those people who have been hurt to know what the truth is. And for me, the truth is that you're doing your best. And if your best means that you don't forgive someone yet, or maybe you don't ever get to the point where you can forgive someone, I don't want someone to tell you that you can't go to heaven or you can't heal, because unless they've walked in your shoes, they don't know. So I don't know. I'm kind of getting flambéed a little bit online about it. But I talked to my in-laws who I was talking to them quite a bit about it last night, about my stance and my beliefs. And I was like, just tell me if I'm off base here. And I was like, I think that if you are religious, I think forgiveness is a result of your faith, not a condition of your faith. I'll say that again, because I feel like it can be the same. The same could be said for a healing journey. In a lot of ways, forgiveness is a result of your healing or of your faith. Very often, it is not a condition of it. So you do not have to forgive to be saved. You do not have to forgive to be healed. But very often, when you are healing, when you find faith, you may find it is a result of those things. Which is the point I was trying to get across, but people are just like, no, you have to forgive. The Bible says you have to forgive to get into heaven. And I'm like, it's not that simple.
And they're literally trying to gatekeep.
Right?
So one time for the folks who do not subscribe to a certain religion, maybe you have faith, maybe you don't, maybe you're agnostic, whatever that might be, what Kara just described can be just having faith in yourself or in the people around you. When I think of faith, sometimes I'm like, oh, no, thank you. But I think of all the things that I've had faith in over the years, and it keeps coming back to me being able to overcome these obstacles. When I have faith in myself to do the right thing, to overcome something, to put myself out there, it works out, because I also have faith in the community that I've built and the people that support me. It doesn't necessarily have to mean for you that you are talking about God or a higher power or whatever it might be, but it can mean that you get to have faith in yourself. And when we talked about forgiveness, I loved talking about that. Like, y'all saw me get right up on there on my soapbox. I am unapologetic about it, but I look at the forgiveness piece as something that you do for you, number one, like you're saying, but also with somebody that you want to continue a relationship with. And that was, I loved how you broke down the difference between forgiveness and resentment. And you can let go of resentment and just not let that person take up any more space. Like, I don't have to actively resent someone. That's draining. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I have to forgive them either. It's whatever you feel, whatever you want it to be. And yeah. I just like how you've broken that down. And then I noticed when you put up that video, the people who have the biggest problems with it are the ones that are quoting a book they didn't write. Good job. And it comes right back to the man in the arena, which is now the woman in the arena. And you're going to hear a really great episode very soon where we talk about this and we will come back to it. But look up the quote, the man in the arena. And I love it. But yeah, all of the quotes. Did you see my snarky? I was in the mountains and didn't have much service, but I did get on for long enough to post my own quote. And it's like, I don't even know what I said. It was Kim 17
or something. I don't know.
Whatever it was, the date. It was basically, if you can believe in something, I don't even know. It was something great. Probably you should look at it. Basically, if you can believe in God, you can believe survivors when they disclose to you.
Yeah. And I think for me, I was like, I just want to make sure I'm not getting too much in the weeds here with this kind of stuff. But I also want to make sure that I'm not falsely prophesying over things. You know, I just wanted to make sure that what I was saying was accurate. And I'll continue to expand upon it. You guys will probably have seen it by the time this airs. But yeah,
I have two things that I want to get to. One of the things that I wrote down when we were interviewing Cheyenne, which if you haven't listened to that episode yet, make sure you go back. She's fantastic. It was really great to talk about. But one of the things I wrote down was when you were talking about the picture of you in the hospital.
Yeah.
And how difficult it used to be for you to look at that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about it because there are those things that we may not even realize are related to trauma, but we just avoid or don't like. And it was interesting for you. You know, it's the picture because you know what it is. And I'd be interested in those of you that are listening. What are those things that just, as the youth say, it gives me the ick, but it feels wrong. It feels off. It reminds you of something that you don't want to see, hear, or consume. Are those related to trauma? And if they're not, what can you do to move through those? So what do you think you did to look at that picture and be like, okay, this is how I need to reframe?
I think it's just simply exposure. It's simply that I've looked at it enough times now that it's no longer uncomfy for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. I think a piece of it is also that masking, because I have told myself this story about what my experience was based on my recollections. But that photo tells a very different story. It's kind of like the memes. I actually just posted one about, it's like when I think I'm doing well with, you know, being overstimulated, and then it's like an owl that's it's like when I think that I am hiding my emotions well, and my face is like,
yeah.
So I think that that's a big part of it, because I know what was going on in between my ears during that time, but I look at the photo and I'm like, oh, that's what everyone else saw. I wasn't doing such a good job at masking. Mm-hmm. That's why it was uncomfy, I think, is because, and this is why it's uncomfy whenever we hear other people tell our stories often too, or someone says, oh, I heard your voice crack in that part, because it doesn't match up with what we experienced or what we feel or we believe. And so simply exposure is what helped me to realign that and be like, oh, I'm not a robot. I'm not an automaton that didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually did have some feelings and some trauma. Duh.
Weird.
But trauma. So that's been my journey with that photo. But I think we all probably have little things that you just look at it and you're like, ooh, like, I don't like that.
Yep. So I was interested in what your thought was there. I had the same thing for my apartment. I didn't want to go right back to my apartment the day of. It made me uncomfortable. It's a crime scene now. And people were like, how the heck did you go back and live there? So we moved apartments, but I was still in, we were one building over, and I was still in the same room with the same bed set up and everything. And it was exposure. Like, I have so many other memories now besides that one. I can drive by that apartment complex today and it doesn't bother me. I don't care. I think about the times that we took Mike's Hard Lemonade and sat at the pool, like that kind of stuff. And it just, it's that exposure and making sure that it doesn't dictate what you get to do with your life moving forward.
It kind of reminds me of how EMDR works a little bit, because it's like when you are re-exposed to these traumas or these narratives or these triggers, but you're doing it in a safe environment and you're having that bilateral stimulation, you're forming new neural pathways. So it's like when you continue to be exposed to this thing that might be triggering, this goes back to a conversation we had in season one about avoiding triggers.
Yep.
But when you continuously are exposed to those things that could be triggering, but you are safe, then eventually your nervous system catches up and is like, okay, this is not dangerous.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. Not to bury the lead or anything. Let's talk about some very recent news before we wrap this up. Because we haven't worked hard enough to get ourselves canceled yet. Eminem's working overtime with the release. Oh,
but can we talk about Eminem really quick before we
I really, really want to, but we're not going to have enough time in this episode. So table it. Okay. I want to listen to the rest of the album before.
Just everyone listen to it and love it. Let's just say I've listened to it over and over and over, and I love it more and more and more every time I listen to it. Cause I'm like, I want to sit down and read the lyrics because he's so fast and I know I'm missing things.
Oh, I read them as I go. Like that first time I'm looking at, the lyrics and how he's constructing those more
I've been listening in the car. So I'm like, every time I listen, I'm like, oh, I didn't catch that the first time, but
yes,
so good. And I feel like I'm just like living in my past and I love him. I love grown up Eminem. That's all. Okay.
There were so many things where I was like, oh my God, he just said that again. That's literally his whole shtick. I should have known.
I know, right? I know.
Speaking of people who say things and probably shouldn't. Let's. All right, folks. We don't have to get political here, but
we get to.
Well, we can. I wanted to approach this from a different way in recent news, and we would be remiss if we did not say anything about it. But everyone was just exposed to very high profile victimization in real time with commentary from literally everyone in real time.
This is the new, where were you when you found out? Where were you when you heard? Yep. Like this is the new, this is like of our generation. It was 9/11. Where were you when you heard about what happened on 9/11? And now we have a new generational thing. Where were you when you heard Trump was shot?
I don't know. I don't think it reaches that level, though, because it was.
I don't think it's as big as 9/11, but.
No.
We haven't lived through an assassination attempt.
That was the part that I was getting asked by my kids. They're like, well, has this ever happened? I'm like, actually, the last one I think was Reagan. Don't quote me. There's many plans along the way that are foiled, that are vetted, that looked through. This was the first attempt. And because it's happening in a time where we live in real time news with multiple angles, multiple cameras, anybody with a microphone like, hello, can give opinion. And then just the wild nature of how conspiracy theories take off.
God,
I don't want you to let's take politics aside completely. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter if they're red or blue. All I want to reinforce here is that there was a victimization of not just one presidential candidate. You had somebody that was actually killed and you had multiple people injured and everyone witnessed it. And that is vicarious trauma. So you're going to feel a lot of different ways. And it's not that you literally were standing right there, but that is a much larger scale view of what victims go through all the time in a smaller stature. And we have this thing called the spotlight effect where you think everybody knows, everybody talks about it. And this just happens to be that, literally everyone knows that this happened. But when you survive something, whether it's a shooting or a domestic violence relationship, or you witness a car accident, you're going to have feelings that are associated with it, as are everybody else. And they have different vantage points. They have different views. And I just thought, as soon as I heard that news, I was like, holy shit, this is a victim now. And I don't care about all of the other stuff that goes into it, because it so quickly was lost that, look, you can go to my TED Talk if you want to know more about this. I do not agree or like that specific candidate at all. If that wasn't my voice, just dripping with disdain, but it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
I thought Melania's statement was beautiful. Did you read it?
I did not. I did not. I kind of turned it off. So again, we had family in town and we were going with kids. So I saw that much. And then I was like, I cannot consume this because I felt that anxiety rising immediately because everyone had a take on it. And it triggered something in me in a big way.
I'm going to read you the part that I thought, again, I don't care what your politics are. I think that she's really just a class act, to be honest. A lot of the things that I've seen from her, I just think that she seems like a class act, but I'm going to read you the part. So she addresses what happened, Secret Service and the man who died and the other people and the other person that was injured. But she said, a monster recognized my husband as an inhuman political machine and attempted to wring out his passion. And so she describes characters of him and says the core facets of my husband's life, his human side, were buried below the political machine. Donald, the generous and caring man who I've been with through the best times and the worst of times. So, I mean, regardless of all of that, she says, let's not forget that differing opinions, policy, and political games are inferior to love. Our personal, structural, and life commitment until death is at serious risk. So I just thought it was very interesting that she framed it like, remember, he's a person.
Yeah.
Like, I think we forget that in a lot of the rhetorics around politics is that at the end of the day, regardless of the things that he may say or do, people forget that he is a human, that he's a father, that he's a husband. And she said, you know, a bullet was aimed at him and they forgot that he was human. So I just thought that was just very classy. And she ends it by saying, remember, when the time comes to look beyond the left and the right, beyond the red and the blue, we all come from families with the passion to fight for a better life together while we are here in this earthly realm. So I thought that was a really nice statement in response mm-hmm. to what happened. Just remember, we're talking about people, like,
and this goes for every victim, every child, every person overseas. Mm-hmm. Don't forget they're humans. People are really hard to hate up close.
Yes.
Around, move in. So, you know, as much as I was like, oh, I don't like where my mind first went, I come at it now from, okay, as an advocate, here's what all of us experienced. We're all human and we may have differing opinions, but the violence is disconcerting, especially right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's just been additional things that have followed up, and it's a little bit of a terrifying world to live in.
Yep. Yep. It definitely is. So I didn't want to get super in the weeds. We can have plenty of differing opinions here. I just wanted to simply point out that there was victimization that happened this week, and it's okay if you're feeling some kind of way about it.
Yeah.
Till next time.
Okay. Leaving you on that trauma note.
I really do have to go.
So all of that being said, please hug and love the people around you. Take care of yourself. And next week's episode, we're going to bring you one of my favorite humans in the world. Just like all the good. What?
I just realized how timely his interview is.
Yeah.
With everything that's going on. Oh my gosh.
There's our segue.
So we recorded next week's episode before these current events happened. You're definitely going to want to tune in now. Oh, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. So next week, I'm going to go ahead and say who it is.
Yeah, go do it.
So next week, we're going to have James Hamilton on. He is phenomenal. He has tons of life experience with personal protection and has actually worked with the FBI. He's worked with protecting high-profile individuals and personal safety. He worked under Gavin DeBecker, and he now has his own personal protection agency. So he's going to teach you so many great things. I literally did not want this interview to end. I'm like, can we have more? Can we just have like more and more and more?
And it's different from the other ones that we've done. I think that's what I took away, is that this is a very different style of interview and the thought mm-hmm. process behind it. So,
and I think it's going to be healing for a lot. Kim and I walked away and I was like, I feel so good.
But I kept marinating on it. And I'm like, you know, I have some more questions about that. And I'm like, maybe I didn't agree with how it was presented or something. So I really want to see what everyone has to say about this. And I would love those comments, especially on Patreon, since we have really good conversations there. This will be one that's interesting to dissect after the fact. And especially now that this is where the state of our country is right now.
Yeah, totally. So thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. As always, please head over to our Patreon or any of our socials and ask us any questions, comments, concerns. We love to hear those. We try to get back to them in a timely fashion. And until next week.
Yeah. See you soon.
Bye.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Hold on, I have to burp.